and welcome back to the White Hockey Periodical Podcast. I promised another show before the playoffs started, and we now have one. And because the NHL decided very thankfully to schedule the Panthers for Sunday, you now have an extra day to listen to all of it. It's great. Coming back to White Hockey for the first time in nearly 4.5 years is Dom Lucigian of The Athletic. It's been a while, Dom. How are you doing?
Great. I didn't realize it's been that long.
I didn't either. We tried to set something up earlier in the year, didn't work out. And so in preparation for that, I looked back and we recorded a show together in December of 2019. God knows what we talked about then.
That was a different time, different era.
It was the before times.
The before times, yeah.
The only thing I know we talked about is the fact that we both have long, unpronounceable last names beginning with L.
Yeah, yeah. It's our claim to fame.
It is definitely our claim to fame, and the claim to fame of how many different ways are people going to pronounce this incorrectly. But it was also funny because my sister was invited to a wedding that family friends have known us forever, and they spelled the name wrong on the wedding invitation.
Ooh.
And she texted me, was like, how could they possibly do this? They've known us for over 30 years. It made no sense.
Sometimes it's not a... It's not them. It's just like an error with the people making it happen. But yeah, that's a tough one.
It was really tough. And I was not surprised because you get used to it after a while. You're a nerd to it. But before we get into why you're here, which is, of course, playoff talk and so much more, since it's been 4.5 years since we've had you on last, I want to ask you just a brief question about yourself. How do you think you've changed in the way you not only write, but the models and how you evaluate everything, because these things move fast in 4.5 years.
Yeah, they definitely do. I think when my career was first starting out, I was definitely more gung-ho about the numbers and treating them a bit more like gospel. But I think at that time, there was still a divide between the numbers and the eye test people and traditionalists and whatnot. And with that divide closing, I think part of the reason for that is learning where some numbers have been fallible, gaining respect for more traditional ways of viewing hockey. And it's also seeing people you considered colleagues and peers in the Twitter sphere or whatever going off into working with NHL teams. And anytime they come back or they give a peek behind the curtain with an interview or whatnot, they make a note to point out that a lot of things in the public sphere they thought were once true, once they get into the game, they realize that, no, it's actually the other way. A lot of things that traditionalists were saying were true are in fact true, and we had it wrong. So it's just, I guess, the humility of understanding where the numbers and models might not have it all and being open to, I guess, the idea that there are things missing that can't be accounted for or aren't accounted for that you have to keep an open mind to.
And you think now with, say, the rewards ballots and the way you describe players and the systems you use, they're different than you used to use them because we do have more data. We do have better data, even if it's not perfect. And so I think the evolution of the discourse has also changed, because when you lose some people to the league, new people come in and they bring their own ideas as well. And I think we have a much better, healthier discourse around it than we used to. Obviously, anything could be better than we used to be, which was just fights on Twitter all day. But now I think it's an evolution of nuance in the discussion, which, I mean, I don't think you could have imagined all those years ago that it would eventually get to this place, but it has.
Yeah, nuance, I think, is incredibly important in any discussion about how good or bad a team or player is. And there are still people who will scream and shout and ignore that, and it becomes a bad faith argument or whatever. But for the people who are open and want to dive into the nuance, I think it's generally a rewarding experience to talk about. But yeah, my own model has evolved a lot since. And I think the big thing has been a larger emphasis on trying to find defensive value and weight it properly and also adjust for usage, especially. I think that's something I've done recently that I've been wanting to do and figure out for a long time. That back in 2019, there were the Julius Honka Wars, I think, where people were like, this guy's amazing. And Tyler Dello, who I work with at The Athletic and who I've talked to a lot over the years, would push back and say, look at who he plays against. This job is easy. And everyone would say, well, look at his quality of competition compared to the other guys. There's not a big difference. And it just, it didn't sit right with me then. And it's always been a mission of mine to figure out the answer as to why so many third pairing defensemen seem to have better numbers than first pairing defensemen. And it's right there in front of us. It's just, it was really hard to figure out, but that is definitely one thing that I have changed my model and am proud of doing recently.
You can see it. You can see it in how the evolution of everybody's work, including yours. And it's kind of fun to think about, you know, because we're in a very different place than we were. I mean, now the Patrick Waugh's coaching again 10 years ago when I remember that being the watershed moment for a lot of these discussions. You know, I could also remember the 2013 Leafs team that made the playoffs, but wasn't actually very good. But it was really that Avs team with Patrick Waugh that was had a PDO bender. And history is different now. It's hindsight. But I mean, instead of talking too much about the past, let's talk about the future and the playoffs. But I have to ask, like, this regular season, I don't think we're appreciating in the moment how kind of crazy it is. And we've got 200 assist players. You've got maybe the craziest heart voting that I could ever remember. The quality of the top of the league. There's a lot of really good teams and it's all pretty even. There's not one dominant team like we've seen in some years past. Are we missing that this is one of the best regular seasons we've ever seen in this moment and we're only going to realize it in hindsight?
So this is something I pointed out halfway through the season to Sean McIndoe, aka Down Goes Brown. And the timing was unfortunate because it was at the same time that all the Hockey Canada stuff was happening. And that really does put a black cloud over this entire season. Is can it really be the best season when hockey culture is still this abhorrent and things like this are finally coming to light and five NHL players are getting suspended, rightfully so, for this terrible thing that happened? And it's hard to wrestle with because the on-ice product has obviously been amazing. This is the best season on the ice that I can remember in a long time for all the reasons you said. And these are reasons I pointed out to Sean McIndoe at the time because he's sort of a hockey historian. And I'm wondering, like, is this one of the best seasons ever? You look at, I think, 92, 93. I wasn't even 1 year old yet. And
that I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, there you go. And I think that's often pointed to as one of the greatest seasons ever. And there were a lot of similarities between what happened this year on the ice and what happened then. And if not for all the terrible stuff happening off the ice, I think it's definitely in the conversation for best season ever, especially with how exciting this playoffs looks like it's about to get.
I think it's hard, and I agree with you, to disassociate the on-ice product with everything else. It is extremely difficult, and I completely understand that. And maybe because I spend a lot of time on Y Hockey talking about this stuff for as much as I can, I have been able to disassociate with it. But if you can't, all the power to you. I completely understand why you can't. Also, with the Coyote stuff, it's like,
yeah,
the discussion gets lost when you're talking about the on-ice stuff, even though it's pretty clear that the on-ice product, and usually if we're talking about the on-ice product, in many cases, it's officials. And then you can't focus on the crazy on-ice stuff because when we're talking about it, oh, the officials blew a call, this review system is terrible, or, oh, the playoff format's not good. And maybe that's just hockey fan cynicism because we've been inured to it over the years of the NHL's a bad league, and I understand that completely. But I think we need to appreciate a little more, and maybe a good postseason helps to this, that the on-ice product is in a really good place, and there's the possibility that it even gets better in the future because, you know, we'll talk awards later, but, like, we didn't even see a full season of Connor Bedard. Yeah. You know, that kind of got lost in everything because the Blackhawks were so terrible and he was hurt. Like, generational prospect, and it wasn't even one of the biggest stories of the year. So anyway, maybe it's a discussion for another day. you did send me a message Tuesday night asking whether we were going to do this, because as we were preparing to do this, it very much looked like it was going to be Leafs-Panthers in the first round. It's not. Thank you to the Bruins for deciding not to win those final two games, I guess. And I still wanted to do this because I haven't had you on for all this time, and maybe the Leafs and Panthers will play again. But when you think about this postseason to come, like, what's the biggest storyline for you from an analytical perspective of the series it looks like we're going to see in the first round, which are all of them extremely compelling?
Yeah, I was honestly relieved when the Leafs lost to Florida, and Boston definitely threw that game to Ottawa for whatever reason.
See, this is a conspiracy theory I'm surprised my co-host didn't bring up, because he'll bring them up from time to time, and I'm usually dismissive of them, but that's one I'm surprised he didn't bring up.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I, how do you, like, it didn't even look like they showed up against Ottawa and Washington, and I don't know, maybe it's a league thing, because now you get the Battle of Florida and Boston-Toronto, which I think will be two of the most thrilling series in these playoffs, but it's just the way it happened was pretty funny, and I was relieved, because I think Florida is a top two team in the East. I think them and Carolina have sort of separated themselves from the pack in terms of their overall ability and all the talent on the team. Boston, I don't think they're that good. You look at the roster and you're like, how are you where you are? You look at how they played in the second half, and their goal differential is, I think, -2. Only Washington is worse since the All-Star break or whatever. And the Leafs have, aside from this losing streak lately, while they were trying to get Auston Matthews 70 goals, like, they've been playing a lot better in the second half. They found a top line that works without Marner and Nylander, which I think is a huge thing for their depth. And I think the Bruins are a very beatable team, where the Leafs can legitimately come out ahead. Against Florida, I think they'd be in a lot tougher, and maybe being the Bruins can give them sort of adrenaline rush to get past the Panthers. But for a first round series, I would definitely much prefer the Bruins as a team to face off against.
And it's very interesting how the Panthers fans are the ones you see on Twitter were kind of like, do they really want to play the Lightning? Because I mentioned it on the other show, like, the Lightning are an inferior team to Toronto in every respect, except when the Panthers see the Lightning, you see what happened in those playoff series and you go, oh crap, here we go again. Even though the Panthers are clearly a better team, but I don't think that matters in the playoffs as much. So let's preview both of them, and we'll get to some other series in a little bit. But when it comes to Lightning Panthers, I think, as I said, the Panthers on paper, we haven't seen the Athletic preview yet, but I'm sure it's going to be something like this. Like, the Panthers are a better roster on paper up and down. The Lightning stars are still their stars, but the depth is just not there anymore. And that happens in the world. There's not much you can do about it. And I think most people will say that. And it also comes down to Vasilevsky not looking like Vasilevsky this year, but that doesn't matter because it's the playoffs. Is there really more to this series than that?
I really do think it'll come down to which Vasilevsky shows up. I think the Leafs and Panthers both got their first round boogeyman to sort of overcome and show that they're the teams of the future in this division. But yeah, up and down, I think the Panthers have a significantly better roster. Their forwards are deeper. Aside from Kucherov, I think the Panthers stars shine a lot brighter. And then on defense, they have some depth, which they didn't have last year. They have three, I think, star quality defensemen in Forsling, Montour, and Ekblad. And the Lightning, after Hedman, it just looks really bad. So the big trump card is Vasilevsky, but even he has looked a lot worse than Bobrovsky this season, where, I don't know, it seems like an extremely winnable series for Florida. And I think this is a different group than the one that got humiliated against Tampa. Was it 2 years ago?
Three years ago, yep.
Yeah. I mean, we saw last year what this team is capable of in the playoffs, and I think we're going to see a version close to that for this series, where they prove they're that type of team, and the era of fearing the Lightning is or should be over.
And it's funny because we kind of boiled it down to, does Paul Maurice and Matthew Tkachuk really make that much of a difference? And it might. I mean, also their roster management, and some of it for Tampa is just the cap and the cap not going up. But it also, in many ways, just comes down to that. Like, does Matthew Tkachuk make that much of a difference? They didn't have it in that series, the two series. And they didn't have Paul Maurice, who coaches very differently to not just Brunette, but Joel Quenneville in that first playoff series in 2021. And I don't want to say it's just that, but it almost kind of feels like it. Because when I look at this series, the Panthers can also sell themselves as an underdog, not just outwardly, but inwardly, because it's Tampa, even though they've played them really well since those two playoff series. And that kind of helps them because they were underdogs all last year and they fueled that to the Stanley Cup final. And Tampa could sell that too, in a way, even though they're still the Lightning. I think the other area is, and I was going to say this about Leafs-Panthers and how much did Toronto learn from the playoff series last year, and for the Panthers, is what lessons did you internalize from those two series? And they're going to take penalties, but do you take the silly penalties that got you in trouble in those two series? And can Tampa goad the Panthers into the same things they did those two series? And I don't know. I think the Panthers are a smarter team. I think they've learned a lot from Tampa. And at some point, you would think the depth pays off. However, the Panthers were not a particularly deep team last year, and it didn't matter. So,
yeah, I don't know. I think last year's team was so much better than people gave it credit for.
The thing about it was that they did perform way under expected with every in terms of goals, not just scoring, but goaltending. But it was mostly on offense where that was a problem. And this year's team also performed underneath expected goals on offense, just far less.
Yeah, that just might be who they are. And this year, they obviously improved defensively to make up for that. But last year, it did feel like Florida was a sleeping giant. I think a lot of people forgot they won the President's Trophy the year before. And I think the upgrade from Huberto to Tkachuk is a massive one. I'm sure a lot of Panthers fans recall 2 years ago that I slandered Huberto's good name a lot. And I think 2 years later, you can see exactly why that is. He is a very great playmaker, but he is not the guy. He is not someone you can put out against top lines. He's not someone who can really drive a line by himself. He has a lot of defensive deficiency where you need to hide him a bit. Tkachuk is the guy. He can play at an MVP level. He can drive a line on his own. He can be competent enough defensively, and he can do all of these things that can pull up a team and win a series on his own in a way Huberto, I think, just couldn't do. And I think that was a huge difference. So when people were saying, look how good Huberto is, look how many points he has, he's playing like an MVP. And I say, there's a lot of other things he's not doing that puts him way below the conversation. And then we see him disappoint in the playoffs. We see someone that can play an MVP rate, like Tkachuk, come on the team. You're like, oh, you know what? That is the difference. I see it now. I get it now. That is the type of guy that Huberto just wasn't.
I have a very soft spot for him. I think all Panthers people do. Yeah. But you were right. And I was never one part of the Huberto discourse. I tried to stay away from that.
I know. Yeah.
That's one of those things where, you know, you pick your spots and you move on. He's a great player, and he was a really important player for the evolution of this team. But when they made that trade, my first thought on Tkachuk was, oh, this is directly aimed at the Lightning. And that's why I keep saying the Lightning and Panthers, the rivalry is so great, is because the enmity comes from jealousy, but it's also the enmity comes from, man, I hate that I had to learn from you and how right you were this whole time. And that's why this rivalry is so good. So it's a very interesting point you made also, not just about the defense, which it was incredible to look at it early in the season and go, oh, all of this improvement's defensive. That's really kind of remarkable. And that's where I think, you know, I didn't appreciate Paul Maurice at the start. I was a little skeptical of that. We were both, me and my co-host. And it turns out, like, he figured it out. And, you know, we have to give him credit as one of the better coaches in the league right now. He got the pulse of this team exactly right. And last year, as my co-host said, they played to the spirit of the system they wanted to play. And this year, they've nailed it down a lot more. And that's why I think they're a scary team. But they could still get Vasilevskiy'd out of the first round.
That is still
a scary thought, too. Or they could get, you know, Kucherov goes on a heater, and then there's not much you can do after that, you know? Yeah. There's also the doomsday scenario of, there's this March game where the Lightning got outchanced by a trillion, outshot by a trillion, and still won 4-3. And, like, that's the doomsday scenario of the series. But we'll see how it plays out. I got to ask you about Leafs Bruins, because I said yesterday on the podcast that we recorded that I think Toronto beats them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's anything, you know, when you look at the numbers, when you look at the series history, I just think this is the time they're going to do it. And I don't know why. Is there any numbers to back up why I think the Maple Leafs will actually do this?
I think the biggest reason to think they'll do this is they have Austin Matthews and John Tavares down the middle, and say what you will about Tavares, he is probably better than Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha, even at this point of his career. And I think that discrepancy alone is something that the Bruins aren't really prepared for. Like, they have some strength on the wing, but they just, every time I look at this roster, I'm like, I can't believe this team is at the top of the East. And I was one of the guys who, before the season started, said, look, this team is still good. They'll still be fine. They're not going to miss the playoffs after setting a record for points last year. They will be right there. I don't know why everyone's so down on them, but I mean, seeing them now, like, they've done that. They've delivered on that promise. And I still don't even understand how. It's just, it does seem to be very heavily influenced by goaltending, and that just might be enough in this series, because Toronto's goalies haven't been good, and the difference between Allmark or Swayman and Samsonov is gigantic. But when it comes to the skaters, there are a lot of holes in Boston's lineup that I think the Leafs can exploit this year, and if they can play their game, I think they have a really good shot here.
And it's funny, we said that about goaltending last year in the mm-hmm. playoffs, and the goaltending for the Bruins was not very good. Like, we only remember Bobrovsky from the Toronto and Carolina series, but when he came in to replace Alex Lyon, he wasn't great in the rest of the Boston series. He still gave up a ton of goals, but the Bruins' goaltending was worse.
Yeah, I think Omar was injured, so I think that's one of the
it might have been part of it, but yeah. I also wonder how the goaltending deployment for the Bruins is going to change, because they rode Allmark for 6 games and then went to Swayman when they had no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to indicate that they might alternate in this series. And then we also remember what the Wild did last year with Fleury and Gustafson, and that blew up in their face. Like, can they really do that?
I mean, I feel like they should. I think abandoning it last year is sort of what made the series blow up in its face. Like, they showed they picked a guy, and I don't think I really think you got to ride out the plan and make the plan the same as it was during the season, which is Allmark Swayman. You got to roll with that, I think.
It's interesting, because when I can't remember a time when a team's actually done that in the playoffs and it's worked, but for them, it might have to. Because mm-hmm. they don't have the advantages that they would have otherwise, other than, I guess, psychologically. But it's not the same Bruins team that beat the Leafs all those years ago. You know,
yeah,
a good chunk of the Leafs core is still there, but not all of it.
Who's like really still there? Just Marchand and McAvoy? Like, I don't know.
Pastrnak,
like, the thing is, like, he talks a big game in this rivalry, but he hasn't won anything. I guess McAvoy hasn't either. But, like, Marchand's, like, the guy who's been there since the 2013 series, which is, I think, where a big part of the psychology is, and the fact that he's still there and Bergeron was still there, I think, was a big part of it. And Chara at the time as well. Like, now it's just one of those guys. And obviously the Leafs team is different, but I don't know, this Bruins team hasn't won anything either. This version of it, at least. And I don't know, I think they... I don't know. Well, we will see what happens. I feel like I'm talking too much about the Leafs looking good and the Bruins roster not looking great, and it just feels like it ends up in a Bruins sweep to
I saw someone post when it was revealed that Jack Edwards was retiring, and they're like, the only way that Jack Edwards' career could end is a Leafs Bruins game 7. Maybe.
That would be great. It would be.
It would be very interesting. What other playoff series? We don't know all of them in the West yet when we're recording this. You will by the time you listen. But what other series are you keying in on as like must-watch first-round series? I think I know the answer, but I'll let you you can tell us which one you're keyed in on the most.
I'm not sure. Like, they're all going to be...
They're all going to be incredible, let's be fair, yeah. But...
Edmonton Vegas isn't locked in. You can assume that one will be. I think that'll be an incredible series. But in terms of the ones locked in, I do love Winnipeg, Colorado. I think it's just as close as the Leafs Bruins series, and it'll be really interesting to see because Winnipeg smoked them during the season series, and you got two MVP candidates on both sides. You got a similar type of stylistic point of view as Leafs Bruins, where the Jets are the more defensive team, the Avs are the more offensive team, and you sort of see how those two powers clash. I'm really looking forward to that. I also think that Canucks Predators will be sneaky good. I mean, those are two teams that no one really picked to make the playoffs to start the season, and they've both been pretty electric for the better parts of this year. That'll be interesting. And they also have a Norris battle between Hughes and Yossi.
Absolutely do. On Jets Avs, because my co-host likes to talk about the Avs here a bit. Going into the playoffs, it's not necessarily representative of what a team will eventually look like. But how concerning is it that Colorado has looked so bleh for the last couple of weeks? And again, the 7-0 game is probably not indicative of a wider reality, but you also have what the Avs did in the playoffs last year, losing to Seattle. They're deeper. And the Jets have the ability to lock it down in a way that almost no other team in the league has. Like, what is the concern level? Because you had it at, I think, it was 51-49, so basically a coin flip. Like, what is the concern level if you're an Avs fan for this series? Because I think the Jets are just a really difficult matchup for anybody. Let alone a team like Colorado, who is one of the few who could outscore them and break through that Jets defensive solidity and incredible goaltending.
Yeah, I think the concern level is definitely high. They drew a bad matchup when they have the power to win their division instead. And I don't know, I have been not as high as a lot of people on the Avalanche throughout the year. There were a lot of times where people were calling them a team to beat in the West, and I never really saw them on that level. I don't think this team is as dominant as the one that won the cup a few years ago, and I've been worried about the team's depth all season, and obviously they made some changes during the deadline to shore that up. I don't think it's enough. So they're going to need a huge series from their star players. That's their big advantage against the Jets. It's just the Jets seem pretty similarly built to Seattle last year, and that proved to be very tough for Colorado to get through.
And it's also that this Jets team is better defensively and has better goaltending.
Yeah, exactly.
And that becomes a huge problem. And yeah, it hasn't happened yet. If this podcast suddenly becomes outdated because Vegas decides they want to lose to Anaheim, I'm sorry about that. But if it's Edmonton Vegas, like, what's different to the series last year? Because another team that could be in deep doo-doo if they lose the series would probably be the Oilers. Like, this feels like, you know, you change the coach, you're a deeper team than you used to be, but the real core issues aren't that different than the one that is took them down last year. And this Vegas team, I mean, they've dealt with a ton of injuries. So it almost feels like if Vegas is gettable, even though they made all those crazy trades and moves, this is the year to get them. So what about that series? Should it happen? Proviso. Sorry if it ends up not happening because we had to record this the day before.
Yeah, I think last year the Oilers got a bit of a short end of the stick in that series. I think they carried the run of play a lot more than Vegas. But at the same time, this Vegas team, I think, is significantly better than the one that won the Cup last year. Oilers are better too, and I don't know how close the series will be, but and I like the Oilers a lot more. It's just that you're right, the problems that were there last year are still here. And I think a full year with Ekholm, a full year with a new coach, a full year of like really implementing the system and getting things rolling should help the Oilers. They now have Zach Hyman, 50 goal scorer, at their disposal, and Stuart Skinner really bounced back after a shaky first month. But Vegas is still a really scary team for how deep they are. It's sort of a similar thing to what Colorado was facing with Winnipeg, where Vegas just has all this depth that can counter the Oilers' sort of lack of depth, where it'll be a star power versus depth type thing. But the difference is Vegas still has a top end with Hanifin, Pietrangelo, Theodore on the back end. They've got Eichel, they've got Hurdle, they have Marchessault scoring 40 whatever goals. And I think it'll really come down to whether Stone is healthy and plays and how effective he is if he does.
It's crazy to think that the Golden Knights did all of that, all those moves, and third in the Pacific. And congratulations, Edmonton. You rebounded from a horrible start and you get to play Vegas as your reward.
Yeah.
It's incredible to see how this format, whatever people complain about it, like it does put some really good teams behind the eight ball, even if, you know, the 1-8 would have probably not looked all that different.
I think the bigger issue is it puts Vegas behind the eight ball, and maybe they deserve that because they've been injured all season. But I don't know. The West is just extremely difficult with so many good teams that there really wasn't an easy matchup to begin with from any team. I mean, Dallas will play probably Los Angeles, who's the eighth seed, and that is a terrifying eighth seed to deal with.
Absolutely. And I wanted to go in a little bit more on just briefly of Nashville. A fascinating team, and obviously the Brunette connection. And we saw what happened with Brunette in the playoffs a couple of years ago, and I think he got badly outcoached in that postseason, and he doesn't have the same level of team he had. And I think, I don't know if Vancouver, they're not better than the Tampa team that obviously went to the Cup final, but they're a really good team. I think they're better than that Washington team that Florida beat. What do you think about that series, just quickly?
I don't know. I think the Canucks have shed the PDO merchant tab that they had to start the season. They played so much better since that first month hot streak to really show that they are a team that belongs to the top of the league. I think there are some depth issues still that are tough to deal with, but I don't know. Nashville's a really top-heavy team where it's Forsberg, Josi, McDonough, O'Reilly, Nyquist, and then a bunch of guys where I don't have a lot of faith in the rest of the team, but I think the Stars can at least hang with Vancouver's, and then Vancouver's a little stronger after that.
Do you think this is the kind of series that the Predators could get one because of goaltending? Because that's kind of how it felt like Nashville could win series like this in the past. But like Saros doesn't feel like super dominant, especially when you go against, you know, the guy who's going to be second for the Vezina.
Mm-hmm. I like, as good as Demko has been this season, I do think Nashville has the goaltending edge this year, just from Saros's track record. And even the second half, he's looked a lot closer to himself. And I think he's had a positive goal save above expected for like 7 straight years. I think he's the only goalie who's in that realm where he just always finds a way and is always good. And I don't know, I think he'll obviously be the key to winning this series because Vancouver is better elsewhere, but they're equal to the task of an elite goalie in their own net.
So before we get you out of here, Don, we have to talk about awards. You do a beautiful awards watch piece every now and again, and it's essential reading. There are a lot of awards this year that have very interesting discussions about them, none more so than the Hart. this is clearly the hardest heart voting that I think we might ever have, because you've got seven or eight legitimately worthwhile candidates, and a bunch of them are just going to get left off of ballots entirely. Do you think we'll ever have a harder heart ballot than this year? It doesn't feel like it, but maybe we will.
Maybe. Never want to say never, but I mean, this is definitely the by far the most difficult that I can remember. It's crazy.
So for your perspective, we've read what you have written. We've seen what your model says. What is the most important thing for you in determining who wins it this year? Because you're picking so many different players from a group of not wrong answers. Like, there are no wrong answers. But what is the most correct answer? And what determines that for you?
I think the most correct answer is still Nathan MacKinnon. He has been the favorite almost the entire year. He has been most valuable the entire year. He is, I think, the safest bet in the sense that he doesn't have the same like red flags as the other guys. He might not have the most goals, assists. He might play with a stacked roster. He might not be the best play driver, might not be the best defensively, but he's not the worst at any of those. So he has the most, I think, concrete package of, I guess, value where everything is balanced, and he might be second or third in every category, and that sort of brings up his total value. And I know with the other guys, there's just one flaw in the case that I think puts them a notch below MacKinnon, who I don't think really has that. I mean, Matthews doesn't have as many points as the other guys. Kucherov isn't as good defensively as the other guys. McDavid has not as many goals as the other guys, and I think has the strongest supporting cast to really make those assists happen. So I know it's really tough. I don't think there is a wrong answer, but to me, there's a clear number three or top three. And I won't be mad if people vote for Kucherov. He does have the most points, but it really does feel like that's his only argument. It's not an argument that I've usually been fond of, as people remember from the Huberto era.
It was nice of you to tie that back together, because I was thinking about that. But how do you tie in most valuable to their team with best player? Because some have said, and I definitely like this line of thing, like the most valuable player to their team in almost every case is a goalie. So if we were going to do that, then Connor Hellebuck should win the Hart. And I think he should be on some Hart ballots. I mean, even though the Vez has now become Hart for goalies. But how do you balance most valuable to your team and best player when you're parsing this? Because in every case, like, these guys are pretty clearly most valuable to their team, some more so than others, because you'd also have the Panarin argument, which he's the most important player and one of the best players on the team that won the President's Trophy. So you've got that argument as well. And as we said, Hellebuck is, you know, he's going to win the Vezina on a team that without him is still good, but isn't anywhere near as good as it is. So how do you balance, you know, definitionally this, but also, you know, it can't entirely be that, because I think then you split hairs too much and you miss the forest through the trees.
Yeah, I think people twist themselves into a web trying to rationalize this argument of most valuable to the team. And there were definitely a lot of Lightning fans in my mentions talking about how lost the Lightning would be without Kucherov. And it sort of sets an arbitrary endpoint of the Lightning wouldn't be a playoff team without Kucherov, while ignoring that the Oilers, Leafs, and Avalanche would face a much steeper drop. It just wouldn't be a drop that puts them out of the playoffs. To me, it's most valuable means most valuable. It's which player brings the most value to their team. If a player is worth six wins, those six wins are just as valuable on a 30-win team or a 40-win team. And I think people just twist themselves into a knot trying to think about the relative value when the player delivering it, that's, I think, all that should matter. In terms of the goalie argument, the way I have looked at it the past few years is looking at how good that goalie is relative to other goalies. Because I think goalies have the largest opportunity to deliver value, and that should be something that is considered and taken into context. So if Hellebuyck is far enough ahead of the pack that he is more valuable compared to other goalies than MacKinnon is compared to other skaters, then I think he should win the Hart. It's just that is not the case this year, where if you look at his percentile rank to other goalies, he ends up at 99.986, something like that. And there are currently six skaters who are above that mark. So to me, he's not on the ballot for that, not on my ballot for that reason, but I get the argument some are going to make to have him, because he's obviously had an excellent season and he has brought the raw value necessary to be in that conversation. But to me, it's a matter of goalies just having the most opportunity to do so.
It's a very interesting discussion, since the Hart has kind of transformed into the forward award in many ways. And that's not, you know, as a result of anything other than it's kind of just how it works. And it's very hard for goalies to win the Vezina, even when we didn't have all of this information in front of us. There's so many good contenders, obviously, but is there somebody for the Hart conversation that should get, you know, not that they would ever win it, not this year, but votes or consideration at the back end of a ballot that we're not speaking of? Because we've mentioned six already, and I think that you could conceivably make an argument for others on the fringes if you wanted to. Is there anyone who you would think about in that way?
Yeah, I think Pasternak and Panarin are sort of in the same tier of worthiness, but above them and above Hellebuyck, I'd put the two defensemen who are leading the Norris race, which is Quinn Hughes and Roman Josi. I think it's been almost two decades, probably more, since a defenseman has even been nominated for the Hart. And I was really hoping that could change this year with Hughes or Makar early on, or even Josi now. And it doesn't seem like it's going to happen with just how strong the other four have been. But they've been so good from the back end that I think they're worthy to be on some ballots for sure.
Yeah, I also would fall into the trap of saying Josi is more valuable to his team than Hughes is. But yeah, as you say, that's kind of a, you know, a false dichotomy in some ways. And yeah, it makes this hard. There was a point in which I was going to try to do a Barkov for Hart, but it's not what's going to happen. He got injured and the Panthers were also too good. And he's going to win the Hart runner-up award, which is the Selke, which is going to be his now for many years. So
yeah, I mean, I have Reinhardt in the same tier with Panarin and Pasternak in terms of what my model shows, but really that is a placeholder for Barkov being injured, because if he was available all season, I think his value would have ended up higher than Reinhardt's. It's just, I mean, Reinhardt has been, I think, also impactful defensively with Barkov this season. He also has 57 goals or whatever he had. So
57 goals, yep.
Yeah.
It's hard for me. It's hard for me to deduce the difference defensively between the two, because mm-hmm. I mean, Barkov's one of the best that we've ever seen play forward defensively, but Reinhardt's also been almost that good. So parsing it out is hard, because I think they both impact each other in ways that are harder to quantify in some ways. And it's different because they used to not play with each other at even strength, and now they do. But Reinhardt was always a very good defensive player.
Yeah.
As Barkov was. So it's the Selke is not an interesting discussion, because Barkov's going to win it, and mm-hmm. he should. And he's probably going to win it for many years. But other awards talk, I think the Vezina's pretty clearly going to be Hellebuyck. The Calder, we have to talk about this, because I know my co-host, he likes to be contrarian at times, and good for him. The Faber Bedard debate is interesting to me because of Faber's usage, and, you know, Bedard's defensive numbers are terrible. We can understand that. But then you also, as we've been talking about this whole time, how do you break that down vis-a-vis his team and being on the Blackhawks? And on your predictions, you had Faber ahead. So again, I can't blame either of them for being the winner. But why, if you had a vote, I think you'd be voting for Faber through all of this.
I do have a vote.
Mm-hmm, you do? Okay.
Yeah. And
well, you can't say it, but
I did pretty much say underneath the chart, because I did have Faber first, and I think I was one of the main reasons Faber's name started gaining so much notoriety in these college discussions is I pointed out Bedard's defensive numbers are terrible. I pointed out Faber was playing number one minutes in Minnesota and excelling in them defensively to the point where what he was doing was more impactful than Bedard. But halfway through the season, the gap between them was large enough that I thought Faber had a very strong case to be the Calder winner. Since then, he, I think, has sort of slowed down. He's hit the rookie wall, and the gap between them has shrunk. And it's not at a point where, like, it's not overwhelming enough to really feel that he's the correct option over Bedard, who I think has been so offensively sensational that for a rookie, I think it's more impressive what he's doing given his environment. The other thing is he's played center almost all year, and I don't think it should be held against him how not ready he was at that position. Anytime he's played with Jason Dickinson and put on the wing, he's looked significantly better. And I think it shows where his poor defensive numbers are coming from, in the sense that I don't think he really can handle it from the center position, but as a winger, it really exemplifies what he's capable of and what he can do in this league. I've made adjustments for usage in terms of teammates and competition, and they've made Bedard look slightly better, but I do think it's probably overblown how much people are putting into stock into, I guess, like the situation that he's in, because there are other players in weak situations that perform a lot better and don't give a lot back defensively compared to, I guess, how his on-ice numbers look.
I wonder if some of that is also like, oh, we didn't, and again, this is stupid, but like how much of it is, oh, we didn't give McDavid the award. I mean, some of that was injury in his rookie season and they gave it to Panarin, but like how much of, I wonder how much of that plays into role. Like, oh, do we have to give Bedard the award? Because he's going to win a Hart at some point, but he's got only one chance to win the Calder. I mean, it's not really smart logic, but it's something I've been thinking about when it comes to this debate. The only other award I would like to get to, you don't have a write-up for this, but I'm interested to hear what your opinion is the Jack Adams, because again, you're going to have a lot of choices this year. Like for a while, it looked like it's probably going to be Tocchet running away. And now you're going to have the narrative of Spencer Carberry getting a dash 37 team in the playoffs. You can make a bunch of compelling arguments for other guys. Again, it's hard to quantify the effect of coaches, but if you had a vote, because I'm, you know, the way the NHL does it, you don't have a vote when it comes to Jack Adams. What would you be looking for when deciding on that?
The Jack Adams is the award for the team that I think outperforms expectations the most.
It is, like, yes. Although last year it wasn't, and good for that. But
even that, like, people didn't expect, it was Jim Montgomery one, right?
Yes, it did. Yeah. Yes, he did.
People had Boston on the outside of the playoffs. So, I mean, they improved by 40 points over expectations.
Yeah, that's a good way to frame it too. Yeah, I'll give you that.
In that vein, it's a big reason why Tocchet was a front runner for the entire season. But I have to go with Andrew Brunette in Nashville. I think he has worked with a lot less, and his influence, I think, to put the team in his image and make it work is, I think, a bit more impressive than Tocchet doing the same. I think Tocchet had a bit more to work with than what Brunette had.
I would be okay with that. I'd be okay with that. And I've said on the show that I think Andrew Brunette is a really good coach. And you could say he got a raw deal in Florida, but he wasn't the right coach for the Panthers at the time. And now, clearly, it's been proven how good a coach he is. But, you know, we can see that it's worked out well for everybody. And that doesn't often happen in sports. So I would tend to agree with you there, but I think the narrative of dash 37 team making the playoffs might give it to Spencer Carberry. That's not how it should work. By the way, I was looking up, when is the last time a defenseman was nominated for the Hart Trophy? I think it was when Pronger won it in 2000. Otherwise, it's, you'd see a bunch of forwards and goalies, but you don't see any defensemen.
Yeah, it was. I remember looking that up early in the year because I thought Makar and Hughes were the two best players in the, over the first 2 months, and then things sort of settled in after that.
Yeah, I think the debate on the Norris is between Hughes and Yossi, and I think Hughes is probably going to win it fairly comfortably. But as we get you out of here on this, so obviously we could talk to you for a very long time, but don't want to have another marathon long podcast. And I apologize for those of you who don't like 2 hour shows. Sometimes you can't help yourself. I know you understand that feeling. Is there any way you're leaning for a cup pick as we start to think about such things as we fill out our brackets and watch them blow up in our faces?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people, you yourself mentioned it, that believe that there's no clear pick for the cup this year. And I think it is a fair position to have, but I do think there's one team that really does stand above the rest, and that's Carolina. Since they added Jake Guentzel, they've just been an absolute wagon. Their first round matchup against the Islanders is a pretty lopsided one, so they don't have to deal with the coin flip series off the bat. And even after that, I am just not very high on the Rangers either. Their path to the third round is a lot better than I think any other team that is considered a top contender, that I think they do have the best shot, and they have the fewest holes of any team. They finally have the star power. I like them a lot to take it home this year.
Congratulations, Corey, if we have to have you on the show again to preview another Panthers Hurricane series. We did that last year, and everything we said was going to happen, it didn't happen. It was amusing, and I felt bad because we worked really hard to give as objective as perspective as we can, and he's one of the smartest people working out there, and then to watch it basically come down to, yes, the Panthers have Matthew Tkachuk, and he won three moments in the series, and that was it. It's just like that felt a little unfair.
Just a
But
little.
I could see Carolina doing it. I could see Carolina doing it. I could see the Panthers doing it if they beat Tampa and that puts rocket fuel in them. And I think the Stars too. Like that's a very tempting pick, isn't it? That one's
Yeah.
tempting me.
That for the same reason they have stars, depth, offense, defense, goaltending. I like them a lot. I
But their
think them
run
and
is
the
so
Oilers.
brutal.
It is, but it could be worse. I think the Kings are a good team, but that's probably the best matchup you can really hope for in the first round in the West.
I think it's the only one where you're like, there's a fairly clear-cut favorite here. Yeah. So
Yeah.
anyway, Dom, I think most people know where they can find you, but just in case they can't, where can they find you?
They can type L and then smash their keyboard. Dom L, smash your keyboard into
That's a
Google,
great idea. I should tell people to look me up the same way.
and usually it works. It's amazing, but yeah, it does.
It does work. And of course, we'll be reading you at The Athletic. There's more playoff previews coming and so much more from you and the incredible team at The Athletic. Thank you for hopping on, and hopefully it won't be 4.5 years until the next time.
Hopefully not. Take care.